We're lucky to be joined today by Clark Hunt, who is the what is your official title now with the Chiefs? You're obviously the son of Lamar Hunt, but you are now an official. Is it chairman of the board?
That's right, Nick.
Well, Clark, I always like to mention the fact that back in 1980, when I, of course, it was only 5 years old, I was kicking against Jan Stenerud in training camp, and you were keeping the chart of me against Jan every day, every field goal, every get-off time, how quickly we could get the ball off the ground. And it's just great to see how, over the years, you have evolved, and now you are certainly right in the thick of things, and we just wanted to congratulate you. We talked with Solomon Wilcots on the show a couple days ago, and yesterday we also talked in detail about the fact that how rare it is when you have people of the power, the money, the success, and the egos on both sides, the players and the owners, that true wisdom and the long-term health of the game can prevail. So congratulations, first of all, for that.
Thanks very much, Nick. As you point out, it was not an easy process, but I think at the end of the day, both sides really kept their focus on the fact that the game is really about the fans, and the fans don't want to hear about labor squabbles. The fans want to be thinking about next year's football season.
Well, let's talk about your role in this and your father's. We read about Jerry Jones and Dan Snyder, and I want to hear about the kind of last-minute negotiations with the Habs, because we see in baseball, we talk about it directly with the Kansas City Royals and what they endure every year with coaches and players so frustrated, some of them want to quit and some do quit because they have a competition that is so unfair. But in football, we have revenue sharing. We have a real commitment to parity. But it was getting out of hand, wasn't it?
At the end of the day, the big stumbling block for the owners has been getting a new revenue sharing plan in place. Over the last 10 years, with the construction of new stadiums, there has become a little bit of a haves and have-nots, even in the National Football League. And that was one of the things that we had to address if we were going to get the new CBA done. In fact, the union had made that one of their priorities, which I think shows a lot of foresight on the union's part to know that they needed to push the league to adopt a broader revenue sharing policy.
Well, certainly if I'm a player and I know that all 32 teams can compete in a reasonably fair way for my services, that I'm going to have a chance to make a good choice. One thing that did not exist 20 years ago was true free agency. So now we live in free agency. Tell us about the Jerry Richardsons and the Dan Snyders, the Bob Crafts, the Jerry Jones, the big market teams that had to give up something. What allowed them? What forced them, what prompted them to be creative and actually come up with an agreement that virtually all could agree on?
Well, just like the CBA was a compromise between the owners and the union, what happened at literally the 12th hour was a compromise between the different teams that represent the NFL. You really have three different groups: the small market teams, who would tend to be low revenue, the large market teams, who would tend to be very high revenue, and then there's sort of everyone else in between. And each group had its own issues. And as we went through the day and a half process of negotiating, those issues were expressed. And then finally, as we approached the deadline, the three groups were able to get together and forge a compromise, which really works for everybody. It does create some financial pain for the high revenue teams.
Somehow I feel good about hearing that, though. I don't know what it is, but I just love to hear that Dan Snyder and Jerry Jones are having some financial pain.
Right.
Sorry,
but
I had to say that.
The key to the deal, though, was it probably created financial pain across the board. The small market teams didn't get everything they wanted. The teams in the middle really were not a beneficiary of the deal, and certainly the very high revenue teams are paying the most. So, like most compromises, everybody gave up something, and the deal got done.
Well, let's talk about the difference, because the stats we read about Clark Hunt, we're listening to Clark Hunt, who is essentially making a lot of the key day-to-day decisions with his father, Lamar Hunt, for the Kansas City Chiefs in the ownership realm. A lot of new revenue has been coming in that has not been part of the old agreement, that has to do not with gate and not with television, but with things like stadium rights in terms of the naming itself, in terms of these essentially seat condominiums, and, of course, the suites themselves. So over the last 15 years, Clark, and correct me if I'm wrong, the Habs have perhaps grown to the point where they're making more than $100 million per team more than some of the have-nots.
I think on a revenue basis, that would be a correct statement.
Okay, so what do we reduce that to? In other words, if it's a $100 million differential between the Dallas Cowboys and Green Bay, what has that been reduced to now?
Well, I think it's hard to quantify it in those terms. And actually, Green Bay, with its new facility, I would not put into the have-not category. But some of the smaller markets who have older stadiums are significantly below the average revenue in the league. And the deal that was forged was really designed...
Like Buffalo?
But Buffalo would be a team that falls into that category, although they've had some renovations recently. But anyhow, the deal that was forged was designed to drive the teams at the very high end and at the very low end towards the middle from a revenue standpoint, with the idea being that everybody would be able to spend to the cap. And if you look at the history of the CBA over the last 13 years, most teams have spent to the cap in an effort to be competitive on the field. And the owners and certainly the players wanted that kind of system to go forward because it creates a very competitive environment where every team every year has a chance at winning.
Let's talk about the example of leaders like Dan Rooney and, in particular, Wellington Mara, the fact that his passing was thought by some to represent the passing of a man that truly, like Lamar Hunt, was always pushing what is good for the game. Did his memory and his example stimulate and inspire some of the owners to compromise more than they might have?
I think absolutely it did. Just listening to the different owners talk in the room, the common theme was, hey, at the end of the day, we've got to put our own interests aside and really do what's in the best interest of the game. And that was get a deal done with the union and create broader revenue sharing, which ensures competitive balance for years to come.
So how do you feel about this? You've got a big stadium referendum coming up, and I know it's going right down to the wire. Tell us a little bit about the particular situation as an example, Clark. And let's start off and just introduce the basic challenge that you have before you, then we'll go to a break and come back. With regard to the new stadium in Kansas City.
Well, we've got a measure that our citizens are going to vote on April 4th, and we've got two issues on the ballot. One would renovate both Arrowhead and Kauffman stadiums. And really bring them up to the modern-day equivalents of new stadiums like Reliant down in Houston. And then the second issue would put a rolling roof over both stadiums, which creates the opportunity for Kansas City to host a Super Bowl in 2015. So we're working very hard right now on the campaign and trying to convince the taxpayers that these measures make a lot of sense for the city and really the citizens of Kansas City.
You're listening to Clark Hunt, chairman of the board of the Kansas City Chiefs and son of Lamar Hunt, whose name is actually on the AFC trophy given to Pittsburgh this year, along with, of course, the Super Bowl trophy itself. We'll be right back with Clark just to get some final thoughts about what it means to the fans in the stands and the ones that want to get in the stands but are paying so much money. We'll be right back on Head Games Radio.
Join Head Games Radio. Call 800-878-PLAY. That's 800-878-7529. And now, here's your host, Nick Lowry.
Welcome back to Head Games Radio. We're joined by Clark Hunt with the Kansas City Chiefs and ownership and fresh from really one of the rare examples of some wisdom, some proactive wisdom in the very remunerative, expensive, and also financially rewarding world of sport. Clark, again, congratulations. Let's talk about the way that you look at this economic model. When I read about that Dan Snyder and the Redskins were raising their ticket rates from $79 to $99 for base ticket prices, you realize a family of four is going to spend $500 for one game. How does a team evaluate what is appropriate for the market, and do teams ever... Are there examples of teams seriously thinking right now, based on this being resolved, of making sure that they don't price the tickets out of the realm of everyday people?
Well, it's something that we think about quite a bit in Kansas City. We operate in a relatively small market and have a very large stadium. We've been fortunate in recent years to have very good fan support, and we want to ensure that that fan support continues, and so we're very careful not to overprice the tickets. We're also cognizant of the fact that the direction that pro sports has gone over the last 10 or 15 years, that ticket prices in generally have become very expensive. And in fact, this year we've taken the step of reducing some ticket prices in Arrowhead to try to make it more affordable for families who might have previously felt like they were foreclosed from the opportunity.
So what is your lowest ticket price now?
It's $49 a game.
Oh, that's interesting when you compare with 99 in Washington. And the Chiefs have also sold out now for, what, about 15 years, right?
Really, last 15 or 16 years we've been sold out. And, that's a byproduct of having a generally successful team and also a credit to our marketing staff doing a great job.
Well, it's a team that certainly has done well. They had a 10-6 record last year. Dick Vermeil was one of the most popular, still remains one of the most popular figures in the NFL. Carl Peterson came in 1989 and completely turned around a fan base that was, I think, 23,000 season tickets. So, you know, at the same time, it's even more of an achievement if you haven't won a playoff game in something like 10 years. So tell me, as far as the future of the Chiefs and the future of the game, what directions are going to be happening now that are completely new in terms of stadium building, in terms of the politics? You have new ownership that are leaders in new ways. Is Paul Tagliabue going to look at this as his swan song, the fact that he's left the game in pretty good shape?
Well, I think Paul's contribution to the game is tremendous over the last 15 years that he's been in the post of commissioner. It's 15-plus years now. And certainly the labor peace that we've enjoyed for the last 12 or 13 years is really a credit to him. And I don't know if he'll view this as his swan song or not, but I know that he was very eager to get a deal done, as was Gene Upshaw with the union. You know, your question covered a lot of categories, but turning to the league, I think the new labor deal ensures going forward that every team, the Chiefs included, have a chance to compete every year. You mentioned that our recent playoff success hasn't been quite what we would have liked. And that's something we want to address. We've had a team that's done very well during the regular season on average, but when we get to the playoffs, we've not been as successful as we would have liked. We're hopeful that Herman Edwards, who's had pretty good success in his short tenure as a head coach in the NFL, can be the guy that gets us over the hump in that regard.
We had Tony Dungy on this show, the entire show on Tuesday. We're going to have Herman Edwards on the show soon. We had Jack Del Rio. But Lovie Smith is another example. African-American coaches like Herman Edwards and Tony Dungy have had significant success. Has the overall attitude of the owners now in the league changed in terms of what is going to most give them the chance for success with their teams?
Yeah, I think the National Football League, maybe more so than any other place in collegiate or professional sports, really is colorblind. And decisions are made at the highest levels with regard to a person's capability to do a good job in the position. And we've seen that here the last several years with the head coaching position in particular in the NFL. And there are no finer human beings or coaches than Tony Dungy and Herman Edwards.
Well, Clark Hunt, you're not so bad yourself, my friend. I just want to congratulate you and the fact that the owners, despite being like herding cats, I've heard some of them say, actually, that they came together. And also Gene Upshaw, the fact that the union was proactive in pushing some of these revenue-sharing ideas. So congratulations. And certainly I know that the investors that have poured and committed $4 billion into the next television contract are pretty happy as well.
Well, thanks very much, Nick. My pleasure to be on today, and we're looking forward to the opening of the season here in August and September.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, sir, and good luck with your future leadership in the NFL, my friend.
Thanks a lot, Nick. Bye-bye.